originally, as schedules and plans go, this was supposed to be Luke's week to do understanding community. But Luke got sick. And yesterday morning was like, no, I can't do the sermon. I need you to do it, which happens. That's life. We get sick. And then I realized, I was like, I don't really have a whole lot to say about understanding community. And normally when I write a sermon, I spend like the week with it percolating, right? Maybe I'm not sitting in front of a computer, but I'm praying over it. I'm thinking about it. Where are we going? And I was like, I don't know. I don't have a plan. I realized for me, Thursday through Saturday, God was putting something on my heart. And so you are getting this not completely formed sermon called Understanding the Ache, which is a misnomer because if at the end of the sermon, if you understand the ache, I've done it wrong. But but it's the best I got. So I'm going to give you a little story about how God's been speaking to me this week. So Thursday night was, for those of you who don't know, the school systems had off on Friday for Eid, which is the Muslim holy day that ends Ramadan. And so Thursday night, I was on my couch and I was feeling just like kind of ick and sad, and I don't know why. And normally, like I would do something to distract myself during those times. And I've realized as Lent has progressed, God has also suddenly convicted me to give up more and more, and I realize I've lost all of my distractions. So now I just have ache. And I was like, this is not what I wanted. And so again, me being the person I am, and I do not spend a lot of time watching reels on Facebook. So it was not one of the things that I had given up. So I was like, I know, I'll watch reels on Facebook and they'll make me laugh. So I will watch funny videos and I will feel better. Right. And then in the midst of this, watching videos, there was a little ad, or not, I guess it wasn't an ad, but it was a very short reel by Kate Bowler, who, love her. She is an author and a podcaster. She wrote a great book called Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Believed. And she does a lot with pain and all of that. And she was talking about, if you see Lent as like a 40-day glow up, that's not Lent. If you're like, this is my reset, that's not Lent. Lent is the ache, right? Lent is the decrease. And it kind of hit me, and it didn't hit me right away because, like, I'm slow and I need things to percolate in the back of my brain, so I, like, you know, then watched a dog video. But as that was percolating in my brain and I was thinking about it, I was like, I have been avoiding ache for so long because, let's be honest, this current administration is corrupt and awful, and when I look at the news, like, it hurts. And when I think about some things that are happening in my job, it hurts. And sometimes I get frustrated, or hurt is really the right word, right? Like, God, what are we doing? Because I don't know that we're growing, and like, I feel that pain even here. And so I have been doing a lot of like avoidance of ache, and God was like, yeah, and you're not supposed to be doing that. And I was like, yeah, but it really hurts. Like, have you seen the state of the world today? Not my friend. And then, so through Friday and Saturday, God was really pulling me into that ache and how that ache is good, even though it hurts. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So I want you to think for a moment, what is weighing you down? I just gave you three things that are weighing me down. The state of the world, my job, and like, I really want to see this church grow. Those are things that are weighing, and that are not happening, that are weighing me down. I'm not going to ask you to share unless you feel like it would lighten your burden to share. But I want you to think about, what is weighing you down? What is heavy in your soul right now?
The world, the climate crisis, endless wars.
Yeah.
Runaway inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling like there's nothing you can do about it. Like, people are hurting everywhere, and you're just like,
yeah. It feels like if the world is a body, it's bleeding from every single thing, and you're like, what do I do first? Because all of these seem critical.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, and I hear you, right? Mm-hmm. And And then the age-old question, why does a good God allow us to hurt, to ache, to suffer, right? Mm-hmm. That is the number one reason people give for why they don't believe in God. Why would a good, all-powerful God let people suffer? Because either he's not good or he's not all-powerful. That is the argument they make all of the time. And so today we're going to talk about that ache, that pain, and why it is good. But first, we're going to talk about the biblical answers. So I feel America, and maybe even post-Enlightenment, although I haven't studied enough to know, we really kind of focus on Paul. Why? Because Paul is logic. Paul loves logic. Paul loves to... He, you know, was debating Greek philosophers. He had a very, like, we do this, and we do this. And we kind of love that. And so Romans 3:5-5 says, not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us, right? So Paul's got your formula right here. Why do we experience these things? Suffering, it leads to perseverance, to character, and then hope, right? But try telling that to the mother who just lost her child or to your friend who was just laid off. That doesn't feel, right, like a good answer. Sure, maybe it's true. But in the midst of pain, in the midst of suffering, Paul sounds like someone who's never actually suffered, right? And so, unfortunately, the church, we have this thing where we're very much like, you know, it's here, A, B, C. And we kind of shy away from emotions in the American church, in the Western church. The Western world, in general, tends to shy away from emotions, right? And so... But then we have the Psalms, which I think are much better. And it's funny. I was looking for some Psalms of lament. I didn't even make it through like the first 15. Didn't have to look very hard to find some different things where they ask these questions without answers. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Psalm 10:1. How long, Lord, how long? Psalm 6:2. How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Psalm 13:2. The Psalms are full of people who ask questions and don't necessarily get an answer, right? There's no Paul in the Psalms being like, well, here's your answer. It's going to eventually lead to hope, right? No, the Psalms are basically are asking those really hard questions, and they're poetry and they're beautiful, and they are not like people who are even keeled, right? Like in the Psalms, you have people who are like either like in the depths of despair or they're very excited about God, and then the other ones are like your word is good, and that's kind of your even keeled. But whenever they talk about emotions, it's either really high or really low. And so for some of us, it doesn't always feel like the right words. I noticed, like, I was like, man, I don't know if I feel like I'm wrestling with my thoughts day after day right now. But also, I am wondering, God, why are you allowing these things to happen? You know, and trying to put those pieces together is hard. And so it brought me back to, like, Lent. And, again, Kate Bowler saying, like, the ache is Lent. And Lent is that ache because Lent is decrease. Lent is a slowing down, a feeling thing. So we should be, the season of Lent is designed to slow us down and to focus on the things that we rush through. That pain, that sickness, that what have you. It is a reminder that pain does not leave this side of eternity. And it's an important, because Lent is also lament. And lament is hard, and it is not something that most people want to engage in. I think of Rome, you know, like entertain them with bread and circuses, right? That's, I feel like, what the world does all the time. What does Amazon do? Entertain us with bread and circuses. Like Netflix, all of these things. And there are some really good shows. I'm not, you know, but there is a way of just getting into us so that we never have to think about everything that's going wrong. because I can watch this show or because I can just order this new thing and it'll be here tomorrow. Like, and that, what?
Sometimes today.
Yeah, and sometimes today. And that's going to fill this hole in my heart, right? And so we pile and pile on top. And I realized, like, these things that I had given up because they were distractions, they were these things that I hadn't even realized I was using to bandage the ache. I was like, I just want to do this so I don't have to think about that. And God's like, no. Like, I need you to be here in this ache, to feel it and to come to me. And that's hard. Really, really hard. And I have this quote from George MacDonald. He is answering the question someone is posing, well, a hypothetical person, but is posing about, if God already knows what I need, why do I need to talk to him, right? Like, why do I need to ask? He should just, like, you know, kids don't, they might tell parents they're hungry, but they shouldn't have to ask for dinner, right? Parents know that their kids are going to need dinner, and they provide dinner. And I really like a lot of what he said, but I took just this one little part to condense it. But communion with God is the one need of the soul beyond all other need. Prayer is the beginning of that communion, and some need is the motive of that prayer. Our wants are for the sake of our coming into communion with God, our eternal need. God withholds so that man may ask. What really hit me as I was reading this and praying through this is also thinking about the desperation of the people when Jesus was there and who, when he says, your faith has saved you. We talked about the woman caught last week. We talked about the woman who showed up at Simon the Pharisee's house and was like using her hair to wash Jesus's feet. That desperation of I need you. The woman who was bleeding for 12 years and, like, you know, came into the crowd and, like, just was like, if I can only touch him. That desperation. The centurion, right? Like, who had a servant boy, right? That he wanted to see healed. And it was not normal for a centurion to go talk to a Jewish healer, right? Those were the lower class. Like, that's not kosher. That wasn't good, right? Rome is all powerful. And so, like, our need and our ache should drive us closer to God. It should make us go, God, I need you. And I realized as I started to get rid of the distractions that were hurting me from the ache, and my ache felt bigger, right? Obviously. But I also then was, like, on the floor in prayer being like, God, I need you. I need you so much. Like, this hurts, and I don't even know what to do. And it is that ache that drove me to God. And so often, and I think we see this a lot, Americans, right? The American dream is I can have everything, essentially, right? I'm going to own the house, the car, take care of things, have the wife and the 2.5 kids and, the, you know, picket fence.
I don't need anybody.
And I don't need anybody to help me. I can order everything I need on the internet. So, like, I don't even have to go to the store to interact with people. I can be independent. And that's where I think so many people, like, the church is dying in America because so many people believe they don't need anybody. And we need so much, and we're so afraid because we don't have to face loneliness if there's always a new TV show to distract us, right? I don't have to face my fear if I can mask it with a whole new wardrobe, right? Like, we have these abilities to really not face pain. And the point of pain is that we would be drawn closer to God. So we're going to look at Psalm 88 today. And we're going to read it through one time. And Psalm 88 is unique in the Psalms of Lament because it does not end on a hopeful note. All the other Psalms of Lament end with, and God, I trust you. Psalms 88 just ends in, darkness is my closest friend. It is by far,
Hello, darkness, my friend.
It is by far the psalm that, like, it's like, wow, do you have any hope? And I think it's an important one that is included in scripture because sometimes it feels like that. So I'm just going to ask that we read. I'm going to have Kelly read 1-4 and then Lee and then go through. So,
Lord, you are the God who saves me. Day and night I cry out to you. May my prayer come before you. Turn your ear to my cry. I am overwhelmed with troubles, and my life draws near to death. I am counted among those who go down to the pit. I am like one without strength.
5-7.
I am set apart with the dead, like the staying who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, who you are cut off from your care. You have put me in the lowest pit and the darkest depths. Your wrath lies heavily on me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves.
You have taken from me my closest friends and have made me repulsive to them. I am confined and cannot escape. My eyes are dim with grief. I call to you, Lord, every day. I spread out my hands to you. Do you show your wonders to the dead? Do their spirits rise up and praise you?
Is your love declared in the grave, your faithfulness and destruction? Are your wonders known in the place of darkness, or your righteous deeds in the land of oblivion? But I cry to you, Lord, for help, Lord. In the morning, my prayer comes before you. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me?
Cool, sorry. From my youth, I have suffered and been close to death. I have borne your terrors and am in despair. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. All day long, they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. Darkness is my closest friend.
And the end. Right? That is, you know, this sounds almost more like it was written by a goth teenager than someone at the end of their life.
Ben Affleck staring.
It wasn't a goth teenager.
Well, we do know it's someone at the end of their life because I know. I mean, I hear you. But he does say, my life draws near to death. And we do know that the author, I'll just skip to that slide. The author, before we go to that, is written by He-Man, which cracks me up so much that his name is He-Man. And it is the most emotional psalm. I don't know. God is smiling with that one. He-Man the Ezraite, and he's described in 1 Kings as a wise man, someone who's very wise. And he was, we know very little about him, besides that he was described as a wise man, and he's a musician and a worship leader. Now I know that artsy people are usually a little more emotional, typically, like they're typically at least. So we have that as well. But I also think it's the wise, to remember that there is wisdom in emotions as well. Because we like to just like, oh, pathos is so different from logos. We don't need those two together, right? But there is wisdom in emotion, and he says he's near his grave. So he is experiencing a lot, and he blames God, which is why I really feel like the teenager, like the stereotypical, you don't understand me. Like, that's kind of what I hear a little bit, but like, you know, you're the problem. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. And before I continue anymore, I really just want to ask, what stands out to you in this psalm? What do you see? What do you hear?
The first thing that jumped out to me is the references to feeling like you're in the pit. For example, at one of the jails where I work, there's a sinkhole that they were trying to work on, because the facility is literally sinking into the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I walk by it, I'm like, aha, the pit of despair. That just jumped out at me as like a universal like metaphor. Like when you're in the hole, like,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I heard depression.
Mm-hmm.
And because he Ooh. Cries out night and day,
mm-hmm.
Out to heaven. He doesn't hear God.
Mm-hmm.
Talking back, and he's. I don't say he's mad at God. I just think he's totally depressed. And when you get that depression, you do have a pit.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, yeah. Number one way people describe depression is darkness, which
when
is...
I fell into the pit.
No.
I fell into the pit. We all fell into the pit.
Winston's going to say something related. Go ahead, Reese.
I found it interesting, like, how pointed he was at God doing the bad things. That's not like super unique, but I feel like a lot of times it's like, there are bad things happening to me, God, why aren't you saving me? But he's like, no, God, you're doing the bad thing to me. You are actively making my life worse. The end.
Yes, right? And that is not the gospel, the prosperity gospel that we hear all the time, right? God's going to make your life better. And it's like, no, God might actually make it a lot harder. Because there's goodness in it, but it never feels good in the moment, right? It's one of my favorite verses that I have come back to for myself, because in and of myself, I am not the most self-disciplined creature. But there is Hebrews where it says, no discipline is pleasant at the time, but it produces a fruit of righteousness. And that's what I always remember, because it doesn't feel good to make yourself, you know, exercise, unless you're someone who really enjoys exercise. I am not. Yeah, but I know that the fruit of
we
making my
body. Exercise buddies.
Yes.
We both could just be miserable together. In a pit.
Well, my point being, right, that the point of exercise, though, even though I don't enjoy it, it leads to good things for my health. And that kind of thing. But yeah, God is. And he's not holding back. There is no like, oh, I feel bad that I'm yelling at God. No, like there is never an apology in the Psalms where they're like, I'm sorry I yelled at you, God. Like I was hangry. They don't say that, right? They're like, why are you? Because they understand God's sovereignty and they don't try to remove God from the pain.
But isn't that what we're supposed to do, is give God everything that we're feeling?
Yes, exactly. But, and that's what he's doing. So he's doing so well in this moment. Of have all of my pain.
Winston said jumped out at me because I was looking at the line that said your faithfulness is in destruction, and in Hinduism there are three aspects of the supreme being. So Brahman is the creator, Krishna is the sustainer, and Shiva is the destroyer. So if God encompasses everything, God is the whole cycle from birth to death. So even though we try to avoid some of those things, I think they're still part of creation.
Yeah. Anything else before I move on? All right. So I already said this, but Psalm 88 is unique in the Psalms of Lament because it doesn't end with hope or trust. All the other Psalms of Lament will end with, but I trust in your unfailing word. But I choose to trust you, right? Or like, I know you are good. The Lord is my salvation. And then there's Psalm 88, which is just like, I'm very sad. Something you want to add, Luke?
No, I was just crying. I was just laughing at the darkness of my old nature.
Right? Yes. It is a very emotional thing. But instead, it ends in that reality of the pain that doesn't disappear. Like, I think of the Israelite slaves, right, in Egypt. 400 years that they were enslaved. And yeah, we always talk about the story of Moses and the great thing, right? But there was 400 years of enslavement first, which means that people were dying, were being born in slavery and dying in slavery. It's that didn't disappear on them overnight, right? As we face injustices, there are people who are dying who on this side of eternity do not get to see the hope, right? And it's hard because it is like, well, what's the good in that? What is the good in that pain? And we live in the already not yet of God's kingdom. It's already here, but it's not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it feels like the not yet is winning. And that's what Psalm 88 highlights so well. It highlights the, is it even worth it? But Psalm 88, the one beautiful thing about it, though, is that he's still speaking to God. Even though he never gets to the, I trust you, my hope is in you, he's still bringing that before God. Darkness is my only friend. And then, like, he leaves it there with God. And I would, you know, assume that later on he, you know, finds God again or gets that joy again. But the point is there are times when we don't get there. And that it doesn't make us bad Christians. It doesn't make us people without faith. It makes us very human. And so this today, like, we kind of talked about what is weighing you down, but where are you experiencing the pain of the not yet? Where is that? Where do you need God's kingdom to show up in your life? And there are lots of different things, and it can be lots of different experiences for people. But, and no answer is wrong, right? Where you are experiencing it is where it is. We do not diminish the way people feel. Like, I want to state that because sometimes it can be, why are you struggling with that? Right? Aren't you over that? Like, we don't diminish pain that people experience because pain is real. And there are few things that hurt worse than having somebody say, you should be over that. Or, you know, God's already healed that. Like, what's wrong with you? Right? Like, we have to let people experience pain without judgment because we do need to be able to listen to people when they experience pain. And have you been pursuing God or distractions, avoidance, work, etc.? Because we can feel that pain with so many different things. I remember I watched this movie once. It wasn't the best movie, so can't remember the name of it. Do you remember that it had Eric from That 70s Show as the main character? And he was a workaholic in the show, okay, or in the movie. And watching it, I realized he was a workaholic because he was lonely. Like, he kept calling meetings because he was like, this is the only way I interact with people, right? Like, and he was using that to fill the void. And a lot of times when we become workaholic, it's not often because we want to do a really good job. You know, it's because we're seeking something else, like fulfillment, people praising us, whatnot. Or we, you know, just avoid things. Well, like, if I just go on vacation, you can't touch me, haha, right? Like, I realized when I was at Disneyland for my brother's 40th birthday, like, because people love Disneyland, right? And it is a money
suck. Happiest place on earth.
Right? And I cannot get over going to Disney World for a week or whatever. Like, the amount of money that is in my head. And, like, by people that I know don't have that kind of money, because I think 80% of people go into debt to go to Disney World, not Disneyland. But that being said, when you're there, though, it's like nothing else exists. Mm-hmm. And it can be really fun and great and power to you if you can enjoy that for a day. But if you're using that to escape, right, because that's what Disneyland is. Disneyland is like nothing bad can happen to me in this bubble. Right? Like, there is no trash at Disneyland. There is no smoking at Disneyland.
No one dies at Disneyland.
No one dies at Disneyland. Like, everything is happy. Right? And the evil person is always smited at the end of the day. And then there are fireworks, right? It always ends with fireworks. So Disneyland is kind of like that avoidance, right? Oh, if I can just make it to Disneyland or insert whatever, you know, experience you want to do. The weekend. If I can just make it here. Or are you like me where you're like, look, as long as I can play this game for an hour, I can forget everything. So this is fine. This is totally fine. Like, where, or are you pursuing God in the ick? And so, let's see. Yes, okay, sorry. Lament, when we talk about lament and all of these things, right, and we talk about this ache and this brokenness and coming before God, it's important to remember that lament is a biblical and Christ-like response to a broken world. I think so much, like, of me and of others like me, like, we have this desire to fix, to solve, right? Like, this is bad, here's how I can fix it. This is an evil immigration, ICE, they're doing terrible things, I want to know, how can I help? And sometimes the answer is lament. Not that, you know, and it doesn't really feel like I'm helping anyone, but it is a process of allowing ourselves to declare that something is wrong and broken. And sometimes the world just needs to hear that things are broken, that this is not the way Christ intended it to be, right? People need to hear, like, this isn't what God wanted. And that's, like, what lament is. Lament is when Jesus, in front of Jerusalem, he's talking about the whole, like, how long I've longed to gather you, like a hen with its chicks, right? But you keep running away. That's him lamenting over Jerusalem. And I have been reading through Ezekiel in my own personal devotional time right now. And two days ago, I read Ezekiel 9. And man, did this hit real hard, because it says, then the Lord called to the man clothed in linen. So, sorry. Those of you who don't know much about the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel is a prophet who had a lot of visions. He is the book where we get the term, like, the biblical angels, and they all look like they have four heads and wings and eyes, and it's just a lot happening in Ezekiel. And it's some of the most difficult Hebrew to translate. And so he is in the middle of a vision over Jerusalem, and this is right before Ezekiel 10 is when the glory of the Lord departs the temple. And so, and he's talking to the man in linen, who is most likely probably an angel of God. And it says, then the Lord called to the man clothed in linen who had the writing kit at his side and said to him, go out throughout the city of Jerusalem and put a mark on the foreheads of those who grieve and lament over all the detestable things that are done in it. As I listened, he said to the others, follow him through the city and kill without showing pity or compassion. Slaughter the old man, the young men and women, the mothers and children, but do not touch anyone who has the mark. Lament saves them. Right? And like the detestable things that are happening in the city, right? Or worship of foreign gods, the different sacrifices. Moloch was a god that you literally sacrificed babies to, right? During this time. And so like God's like, these things are detestable to me and they need to stop. And the only people who are saved are those who are full of lament. And our salvation sometimes is in that lament. The salvation for the world is in that lament, and that is hard, at least for me, right? Like, I don't want to stay in sorrow. That sounds awful, right? I want to, that's contrary to everything the world tells me I should do, and yet it is the lament that saved these people from God's wrath, and sometimes the world needs to hear the church lamenting, and I think too often, we have that, like, at least I do, of I don't want to say anything unless I'm doing something, you know, I have all the right answers, so I have all of this, and it's like, I can lament, though. I can cry, you know, I don't need all of the answers. I don't need to be a problem solver to be able to lament. And then, where do you need to lament today? And again, this is different for everyone. And what would it look like for you to pour out your emotions to God? For me, it most often looks like just lying on the floor. Like, I'm very much I like to be close to the floor. I guess you would call it grounded.
Floor time is very important.
Yeah.
I don't have science behind it, but I know it's true.
But, like, for me, that laying prostrate is one of the most powerful positions. As I like surrender to God and give him everything over. And there is lots of injustice. It doesn't take, you know, it just, I heard today, like on the radio, Bright FM is talking about like, sometimes it feels like there's nothing but bad news in the world, but you can always find good news here, making your world brighter. And I was like, ugh. Because I was like, that's not what we're called to do necessarily. Because the world has lots of bad news, and we are called to lament, mm-hmm. not to ignore it. That does not mean that Bright FM, you know, praise God, all of that, you know, worship God, that's all beautiful and good. But I do think there's something wrong with the idea of, like, we should always just be happy. We should always be seeking brightness. The ache should drive us closer to God in desperation and in hope, for he is our only hope.